Welcome to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff, joined by Reggie Rizzu. Coming up on today's episode, human brains are growing larger each passing decade. What medical benefit might this have for humans? We'll tell you. Weird Wednesday is chock full of weirdness. A piece of a stocking cap is mistaken for an animal. Raccoons on the loose in the Netherlands. And one man's bizarre quest to spit water fountain style for nearly 6 minutes. Yeah, more details on the way. Plus, on this day in history, the Pony Express rides and ceases to ride over the course of 18 months. That's coming up on Cool Stuff. We'll get today's episode started in the medical world as researchers at UC Davis have made an interesting discovery. Human brains are apparently getting larger. A recent study revealed that participants born in the 1970s had 6.6% larger brain volumes and almost 15% larger brain surface area than those born in the 1930s. Those findings recently published in the peer-reviewed journal JMA Neurology. So, what does this mean? Shouldn't we all be significantly smarter or something? Well, that's not necessarily the case for a variety of reasons. There is potentially some good news here. The researchers hypothesize that increased brain size may lead to an increased brain reserve, potentially reducing the overall risk of age-related dementias. We'll explain more, but first, per the study's first author, Charles DeCarli, quote, "The decade someone is born appears to impact brain size and potentially long-term brain health. Genetics plays a major role in determining brain size, but our findings indicate external influences, such as health, social, cultural, and educational factors, may also play a role." So let's talk about how they actually determined brain size is increasing. What was the methodology here? Well, the researchers used brain MRIs from participants in the Framingham Heart Study. That's a longitudinal or long-term study taking place beneath the entity formerly known as the National Heart Institute. The intention of their research is to identify common factors or characteristics contributing to cardiovascular disease, but why not use that same info to also look at brain health? Two birds, you know? Their study launched in 1948 in Framingham, Massachusetts, and thus the name. The original cohort consisted of 5,209 men and women between the ages of 30 and 62, and the research has continued for 75 years. So it now includes second and third generation participants. So what about the brain portion of this? Well, the MRIs were conducted between 1999 and 2019, so more recently, with FHS participants born during the 1930s through the 1970s. In total, there were 3,226 participants at an average age of about 57 at the time of their MRI. The UC Davis researchers compared the MRIs of people born in the 1930s to those born in the 1970s and found a gradual but consistent increase in several brain structures. For example, a measure that looked at brain volume showed steady increases decade by decade. For participants born in the 30s, the average volume was 1,234 milliliters, but for those born in the 70s, the volume was 1,321 milliliters, or about a 6.6% greater volume. Cortical surface area, that's a measure of the brain surface, showed an even greater increase decade by decade. Participants born in the 70s had an average surface area of 2,104 square centimeters compared to 2,056 square centimeters for those in the 30s. That's almost a 15% increase in volume. The researchers also found brain structures like white matter, gray matter, and the hippocampus, the latter being a brain region involved in learning and memory, also increased in size when comparing participants born in the 30s to those in the 70s. So let's ask the question once again, what does this mean and why is it relevant? Well, approximately 7 million Americans are currently living with Alzheimer's disease. That's according to the Alzheimer's Association, and that number is expected to rise to 11.2 million by 2040. But while the numbers are rising within America's aging population, the overall incidence of Alzheimer's, meaning the percentage of the population affected by the disease, is decreasing. A previous study found a 20% reduction in the incidence of dementia per decade since the 1970s, and researchers believe improved brain health and size may be one reason why. Per DeCarli, quote, "Larger brain structures like those observed in our study may reflect improved brain development and improved brain health. A larger brain structure represents a larger brain reserve and may buffer the late life effects of age-related brain diseases like Alzheimer's and related dementias, end quote. So that certainly seems promising for younger and future generations, assuming this trend of increased brain size continues. That said, it is worth noting the study's pros and cons here. Obviously, it's a huge benefit to have access to three generations worth of participants with birthdays spanning almost 80 years. On the flip side, the overwhelming majority of participants in this study were or are white, so the entirety of the population not represented here. Would be great to have some more diversity, of course, in the information presented. So as I sit and think about this, Reg, I was always under the impression that brain size didn't really matter all that much in humans, given we allegedly, at least according to what I've always heard, only use a percentage of what's available. At least that was, again, the impression that I was under. So it's interesting to me that a larger brain means the potential ill effects of dementia can be mitigated, because I guess intuitively, I would have assumed it was all a matter of which part of the brain was affected, but that's clearly not the case here. So encouraging news, hopefully good news for you and I, and perhaps even better news for younger generations still to come. We'll see. And I would imagine that this study will continue on as well. So hopefully we will have more information in the future.
Heading off to Weird Wednesday. I feel like I should call this one Recap Weird Wednesday for all the stories I have. I feel like I'm just doing same story, different week, different thing. But the premise is the same. So we're going to start out in England. Recently on Weird Wednesday, we talked about a statue of a dog that was trapped and rescue workers were called because people thought it was a real dog. You know, they came out, they saved it, found out it wasn't real. Well, a similar situation has happened again, this time with a hedgehog. This one happened in England where a woman rescued what she believed was an abandoned baby hedgehog and took it to a local animal hospital. Seems reasonable enough. However, when she brought it to that animal hospital, veterinarians told her that what she had actually rescued was a pom-pom from a beanie hat. The Lower Mosswood Nature Reserve and Wildlife Hospital said in a social media post that, quote, kind soul, end quote, rescued what she thought was a very shy baby hedgehog and took it home. But when she noticed that it hadn't, quote, moved or pooped all night, end quote, she was concerned, or at least that was according to veterinarian Janet Kotsky. That is when they informed her it wasn't a hedgehog. Per Kotsky, she was an older lady, maybe 60s or 70s, well-spoken and well-meaning. She said she could see something on the roadside that looked like a hedgehog. From a distance, you take it at face value. She didn't handle it at all. She scooped it in a box with some cat food and left it alone in a warm, dark place. She did everything so well, she barely peeked at it because she didn't want to stress it out, end quote. The animal hospital did praise the woman for her good intentions. So I guess I can kind of see like, oh, this thing looks like a hedgehog. I don't want to spook it. Sometimes, you know, little babies, they can get a little anxious and it can lead to their death. So she did everything right. Still, it was a pom-pom from a beanie.
I hate to laugh because very sweet of her, but how do you not recognize that you're talking about a pom-pom from a beanie hat and not an actual hedgehog?
So according to the animal hospital, quote, remember, kindness knows no bounds, even when it's a faux furry friend. So they praised her, but I'm assuming at the end of the day, they still had a good laugh about it, too.
Okay, yeah. So two things can be true here, Reg. Of course, as you said, praise this woman for doing the good, the humane, the right thing, or what she believed to be all of those things. That I can very much appreciate, as we've talked about on this show. I'm an animal lover, which means I also love others who are animal lovers and want to do right by them. So major kudos to this woman. To me, it's equally interesting that she saw this thing and just assumed it was a hedgehog of all animals without being able to give it a real close inspection. Maybe hedgehogs are pretty common where she's at, but if I saw something on the road that was believed to be an animal, I'm likely going mouse, cat, dog. It's a long list before I get to hedgehog.
As I said, I feel like this Weird Wednesday is all about it happened again. For this one, another bomb has been found in someone's yard, this time by a dog digging in a Florida man's yard. Matthew Sims of Jacksonville said his dog Baby was playing and digging when she came upon a metallic object next to his garage. a decades-old military bomb. Sims told local TV station WJX-TV, quote, "You couldn't tell what it was until you started pulling it up. Once I got it halfway out, I was like, oh, I know what this is. Let me gently put it back down," end quote. And good move on his part. Can't always say that about a Florida guy. Oh, just kidding. Just kidding, Florida people. Don't
watch
get mad
it,
at me.
Watch it, Reg.
The bomb was about a foot long and weighed about 10 pounds. He called Jacksonville police and the bomb squad responded to examine it. According to the police, it was an old, unexploded piece of military ordnance and was likely buried for decades based on its state of decay. Now, they did evacuate nearby homes, and then the bomb squad came in, hauled it away. However, they are unsure of the origins of the bomb. And this is in Weird Wednesday because why does everyone seem to have a bomb in their yard? Maybe this is why we're supposed to call Digger's Hotline. Not because they're worried about the wires, because they're trying to find all the bombs that people seem to have in their yards.
Wait, is Digger's Hotline still a thing? I guess it must be. I haven't heard a commercial for them in at least two decades, but yeah, apparently you do have to watch out for explosive devices in your yards these days. I guess for this guy, he's lucky it never went off in the decades leading up to its rediscovery here recently.
All right, continuing that theme of this again for Weird Wednesday, raccoons have escaped from a zoo in the Netherlands. So once again, animals on the loose. You know, I still say you can't trust a raccoon, even though they do sometimes act cute. That is actually when I trust them the least. Anyways, back to the story. The Aqua Zoo, which sounds like it should be an aquarium, not a zoo with aqua in the name. Well, that zoo recently received 12 raccoons, but when the caretaker arrived the next day to check on them, only one was in the cage.
What's up with that lone raccoon who hung around? They didn't want to escape? So did they find the rest of them, Reg?
They did find two later in the day, but there are still nine on the loose. Zoo officials determined two pieces of mesh surrounding the enclosure did not fit together properly, allowing the raccoons to dig their way out. Later that night, one of the raccoons was spotted by the zoo, but they were unable to catch it. They have placed traps in a nearby nature preserve in case the nocturnal animals managed to climb over the fence. The zoo also said all of the raccoons have been spayed or neutered, so they're not worried about them breeding in the wild. They also added that the raccoons are timid and not believed to be a danger to humans, just your trash cans, because that's what they do.
Well, I've seen a lot of different types of raccoons, meaning some that are even close to domesticated, but I've seen a lot of vicious raccoons around humans anyway when they feel threatened, so while they may characterize these little guys as timid, I think I'd still steer clear if I came upon one in the wild.
All right, we're going to close out Weird Wednesday with another why? There is a new Guinness World Record for a human water fountain. You heard me right. Somebody turned themselves into essentially a water fountain. So a Chinese man drank 1.1 gallons of water, which, nope, not going to do that. Then he brought it back up to break the record as he regurgitated water for 5 minutes and 51.88 seconds. You heard that correct. 5 minutes, 51.88 seconds. The man downed the water and used muscle control to continually spray a stream of water from his mouth to break that previous record by a lot. Before this, the record was 56.36 seconds. So he beat it by almost 6 times. In case you were curious about the rules for this, Guinness World Records say the rules for the longest time to spray water from the mouth category required the water to be spurted or sprayed from the mouth with no dribbling allowed. The record attempt ends when the stream breaks or stops. So that means for almost 6 minutes, he had a stream of water coming from his mouth with no dribbling, no breaks, no stops. I don't know how you do that. I mean, did he breathe during this time? I don't understand, honestly. Now, I ask, why would somebody do this? It turns out there's some history behind it. Guinness World Records said water spouting is a trick involving precise muscle control and has been performed since at least the 17th century. So I guess there's some history behind it, but I'm still asking why. And if it's been performed since the 17th century and the record before that was 56 seconds and now it's almost 6 minutes, this guy, as much as I think this is a dumb record, very impressive.
I don't know. I really don't even know anymore with some of these bizarre Guinness World Records, history or not. I'd have just as easy of a time telling someone in the 17th century, I don't care, knock it off, quit spitting water from your mouth, it's not impressing me, okay? As we say time and time again, why? What exactly are you using this for? Is it going on your resume? Are you applying for a job and calling out the fact that you can spit water from your stomach for 5 minutes plus? Some people just like a little bit of recognition. Now, maybe if you're some sort of performer and this is something that you do with regularity and it buys you a little bit of publicity, okay. But by and large, these bizarre record-breaking attempts that we talk about on Weird Wednesday mainly are by people who have no vested stake. They don't stand to benefit monetarily from this, at least as far as I can see. So, and in this case, disgusting. Regurgitating water for 6 minutes plus? There's no part of me that wants to see this. And I can't imagine your friends do either. If you're at a party sometime, does anybody call for you to break out your spitting water trick?
Taking a look at this day in history, on April 3rd, 1860, the Pony Express was established. Although there is some debate on who created it, William H. Russell, William B. Waddell, and Alexander Majors, who were partners in the freight business, contracted with the government, so a lot of people give them credit for establishing the Pony Express. The idea was to create a fast mail service that could deliver letters and important communications between East and West Coast of the United States. The Pony Express route was nearly 1,900 miles and traveled from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento, California. The route passed through what is now present-day Kansas, Nebraska, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, and California, and consisted of approximately 190 relay stations along the route, spaced about 10 to 15 miles apart. Now, it was divided into those segments so riders could swap horses and continue the journey. Using this method, riders could cover the distances quickly, usually about 75 to 100 miles a day. The concept is actually replicating what Genghis Khan supposedly did, according to Marco Polo, as he had riders carrying messages to stations 25 miles apart. It was said that a single rider for Khan could travel 300 miles in one day. Even though the conditions could be harsh and dangerous, the Pony Express service managed to reduce that time to deliver mail between the coasts from several weeks to about 10 days. The discovery of gold helped establish the business, but the Civil War kind of diminished the need for it. Now, the other thing that caused the Pony Express to go away, it was expensive. During the time that it ran, it cost the government $700,000 to run, but they only received $200,000 returned for postage. The service was eventually made bankrupt and replaced in 1861 by the Transcontinental Telegraph. Now, although the American Pony Express only lasted 18 months, it played a significant part in linking the American West and East Coast and obviously had a significant impact on American history. Over time, it has become interwoven into the folklore of the American West. And during its 18 months of operation, the Pony Express made a total of 308 complete runs, covering a distance of about 616,000 miles, which is equivalent to circling the Earth more than 30 times. It delivered 34,753 letters, and only one bag of letters was lost out of all of those runs. Its most famous rider was probably Buffalo Bill, real name William Cody, who joined the service at just 15 years old. And a side note, Buffalo Bill, he's the reason why I don't like to sit my back to the door. So I don't know if you know this about Buffalo Bill. As he got older, he didn't ever want to sit his back to the door because he didn't want someone to come in and shoot him without knowing it. He was, I guess, protective that way. Well, the one time he was convinced of sitting with his back to the door, someone did come in and shoot him in the back and kill him. Again, this is why I don't like my back to the door of a restaurant or building or anything. I like to see who's coming in because I don't want to get shot. Not that I expect anyone to shoot me, but you know, you never know.
Okay. I have no comment on your desire in 2024 to not sit with your back to the door, but it is interesting that that's ultimately how Buffalo Bill perished. What I will say about the Pony Express, two things jumped out at me. One, the fact that it only lasted 18 months and is still as relatively well known as it is in modern history, That's pretty wild. And I think it speaks to what you were saying, just how big of an impact it ultimately had on this country and the way things progressed in terms of sending messages from East Coast to West Coast and vice versa. Number two, if I had lived at that time, I think that'd be a pretty fun job. You get to get out, see the scenic countryside, which has really yet to be developed in any meaningful way, especially if you're out west. Just you and your horse delivering a sack of mail. And yeah, it's going to get tough at times, especially if weather rolls in. But compared to other jobs of that era, I think I'd dig it. I think I could be a Pony Express rider. Till I spent 3 straight days in the rain, and then I'm probably rethinking my toughness in all of this. That'll do it for another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Marcus Paff. He's Reggie Rizzou. Get in touch with either one of us by hitting us up at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Seriously, we'd love to hear from you. Positive, negative, corrections, omissions, anything that you feel is warranted, or do you want to fill us in on? Because we are not experts, but we are here, hopefully, to bring you some level of information and entertainment each day. Thanks for being with us. Back tomorrow with more cool stuff.